Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
No, I have to correct our voiceover guy again. For the second week in a row, John Rook is not here. John Rook has other duties with ESPN Radio. He, as you know, calls college football games on Thursday nights or whenever the game of the week is, but lately it's been almost every Thursday, and John is once again on the road. Where is he this time, Two-Gender? What's the Thursday night game?
Cincinnati, I think.
Yeah, against
playing South Florida.
South Florida. So John won't be here today. He might have a chance. If he does, he might call in during the show. But for now, you've got me, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. My producer behind the window there is Dan Two-Gender. We have later up in the show, we'll have Russell Baxter from ESPN, Mr. Football over there, who will join us for his usual Thursday segment. And we also have you, of course. 508-543-7482 is the phone number. Web radio at Patriots.com, the email address if you'd like to talk about a pretty interesting game coming up this week. It's week 9, so who are the Patriots playing? But, of course, the Indianapolis Colts. This is the fourth year in a row now they've met on week 9 in the schedule. And for now the second year in a row they're playing that game, or is it more than that they're playing in Indianapolis? But in any event, it's at least the last 2 years. I forgot about the year before that where they played that game, but actually, I think that was a home game for the Pats. But nice win against the Rams this past week. Took some serious injury hits throughout the game in the backfield. They were juggling to try to get enough players to cover the Rams' offense in that game, but they pulled it out at the end. Delph O'Neal, who had gone out with the head injury earlier in the game, came back in, made the key interception at the end of the game, and thought he was just going to take a knee there, but he kept running and running, and nobody wanted to tackle him. I thought he was going to take it to the house at that point. But good win over the Rams, who were starting to play some good ball under Jim Haslett. But now this week we've got Peyton Manning and the uncharacteristically uneven, I'll say, Colts this year. They're 3-4, and could easily be a lot worse than that because they won two games at the very end with miracles that they shouldn't have won. They could easily be already out of playoff contention at this point. But going to be our first visit to the new Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, where the Colts haven't had much success so far this year. They've lost a couple of games already there. But this is Patriots-Colts. It's Manning versus this banged-up New England secondary. And, the Colts certainly have injuries of their own. Their good news for them is they're getting back, it looks like, running back Joseph Addai NFL Defensive Player of the Year Bob Sanders, who both were out for the past few weeks, but this week, at least so far, the participation report shows them both having played, and Tony Dungy even said if they both perform well in practice this week, he expects them to play. I would expect that they're going to play regardless of whether they have a good week of practice or not. They're not in, they were targeting the whole time this week 9 game versus the Pats for their comeback, and it looks like that's going to happen just in time for it couldn't happen at a better time for the Colts, but certainly not a good time for the Patriots to face either of those guys, whether they're still injured or not. But this is not going to be an easy game, of course, despite Indy's 3-4 record and the fact that their offense has not been in sync. Peyton has been throwing way more interceptions than we're used to seeing him throw, and just doesn't look like the Peyton Manning we're used to seeing in the pocket back there. He looks a lot more like the Peyton Manning we saw in his rookie year when his team was 3-13. But that being said, there's no better time than now for New England's front seven to get some pressure and more sacks than against this quarterback who, like I said, after all the injuries and the shuffling that took place in the secondary last week against the Rams, they can ill afford to have a letdown against Peyton. and all of his weapons on offense. But your thoughts on this game? Again, 508-543-7482 is the phone number. Webradio at patriots.com, the email address. A couple of little housekeeping notes before we go further. The NFL announced today some good news for the Patriots. Linebacker Jerod Mayo named a Defensive Rookie of the Month for his stellar play. Led the team with 24 tackles in the month. Patriots went 3-1, as you know. First linebacker selected by the Pats in the first round of the NFL draft under Bill Belichick. Mayo has started all seven games so far this season at inside linebacker, and he leads the team with 55 tackles and has also added a fumble recovery, posted his best performance, the release says, in his first appearance on Monday Night Football against Denver, had 11 tackles. He's also the first Patriots player to earn Rookie of the Month honor since wide receiver Deion Branch did it on the offensive side back in September of 2002, and the first New England player to win Defensive Rookie of the Month since the league started the award in 1996. And in case you're wondering, Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan was named the Offensive Rookie of the Month. Also, Offensive, Defensive, and Special Teams Players of the Month, non-rookies, were named. And Steven Gostkowski, kicker for the Pats, was named for the Defensive Award. He made 9 of 10 field goals in the month. Has 38 points to lead the Pats in scoring so far. He's made 16 of 17 on the year and is a perfect 10 for 10 under 40 yards. In two games this month, Gostkowski's made all 3 field goal attempts. Patriots won both games by fewer than 10 points, it notes here. And he's made 23 of his past 24 field goal attempts dating back to last season. Career accuracy, 85.1%, is the best in Patriots history. He's 57 out of 67 in his career. So Gostkowski wins Special Teams Player of the Month for October. And if you care, Texans wide receiver Andre Johnson got the offensive award, and Dolphins big mouth linebacker Joey Porter got the defensive nod. Also, want to just make a quick little note here. We got some delicious goodies delivered to us by a woman who is now, a gorgeous young woman who is now my favorite listener. Used to be Hot Amy from London, whose nickname I gave to her a while back because of the picture she sent us.
Did not give her that name.
Yes, I did. I did so give her that name. Don't try to take that credit away from me. Oh, now Gary's. Now he makes an appearance on the show. What do you have to say for yourself?
I was upstairs, but you can't take credit for that name.
I've been calling her Hot Amy since she sent those pictures in.
But she refers to herself as Not So Hot Amy, which Paul said.
She refers to herself as that because I started calling her Hot Amy.
If two gender called her Skanky Amy from London and she started calling herself Skanky Amy, are you taking credit for that?
No. But I started calling her Hot Amy, and then when I started doing that, Paul was saying, she's not that hot. She's
right,
not so hot,
so
because she used to make fun of her.
Not So Skanky Amy from London. Are you taking credit for that?
No.
If she said she was Hot Amy from London, then yes, you could take credit for her, but that's not what she calls herself, even though she is.
My point is, she calls herself that because I started calling her Hot Amy from London.
No, she calls herself that because Paul said.
Eric, you're so wrong.
Oh, my God. I Anyway, Amy, I think you've been supplanted because young Emily, college student from, I believe she's out
Wait,
in California.
Let's get a Hall of Famer's opinion on Emily in the red dress.
Oh, come on, Tip. That's Hall of Fame quality.
Right here?
Yes, both of them. They're the same girl.
They're the same.
They look
girl.
A little different, but. Oh, you shouldn't be taking this long, man. Come on.
I can't.
Speechless?
I can't go there. I got daughters.
That's all the proof you need, folks. Anyway, Emily sent us some delicious chocolate chip homemade cookies, and she writes in, sorry it took me so long to send them. I had a genetics and anatomy exam. Well, I could help you study for that if you want, Amy. Emily. Then had to spend the weekend recovering by drinking. Then I needed some time to recover from all the partying. I'm not exactly available, but since my relationship is a fluid situation, a lot of drinking references in there, Tip. I decided to send pics anyway. Who knows? I may be single by the time you get this. Well, let's hope so. Those were delicious. But anyway, back to the game at hand. New England
at 3-4. What would you?
New England at Indianapolis this weekend, 8:15, the Sunday night game, and one of the hotter players as far as the way he's been playing this week. Don't take me out of context, too, gender. Is tight end Dallas Clark, who caught a couple of touchdown passes last week from Manning. He earlier this week had a chance to speak with the New England media, and here's what he had to say.
Sorry, Eric, you caught us off guard. Here's what he had to say.
All right. Dallas, how are you?
Great, how are you guys doing?
All right, thanks for taking a few minutes.
No problem.
All right, just start us out. Colts in a little bit of an unfamiliar position from past years at 3-4. How would you answer sort of why are the Colts 3-4 right now?
We're doing our best trying to figure that out every day. I think just kind of looking back, it's a combination of a few things, just people making little mistakes that we're normally not making. It's just kind of younger guys gelling. It's timing. It's just misfortune. Just other things that happen in the NFL. So, it's just really, we're really not trying to, try to put a blame on anything or anyone. We're just trying to get better, and we're just trying to keep the focus on getting better every day. And we showed signs of that last week, and it just didn't. You got to play the full four quarters, and we're learning how to do that. And it's just been on and off this year for whatever reason.
Dallas, how odd is it to be facing the Patriots under these conditions? I mean, usually when you guys meet, it's for supremacy in the AFC. Both teams are undefeated or maybe one loss, but now both teams are sort of fighting for their lives here.
Yeah, I mean, this is, definitely different, both teams, I think, have great confidence in themselves, and they have great leadership, and I feel both teams aren't really, panicking, hitting the panic button, yet. And, I think everyone, I think the leadership, the leadership. And I think that's really going to gel, or that's really going to help gel the teams and really help get through this tough time for both teams. I think both teams are definitely, going through some adversity that, not used to facing. But, I think everyone is approaching it the right way, and this is definitely a different situation for us, but definitely are, looking forward to the challenge.
How hard was it after the Tennessee game? It sounded like Tony all but conceded the division, saying it was going to be tough to get back and try to make the playoffs, but really the division was probably out of reach. How tough is it to hear that, halfway through the season?
That's very difficult, but that's just that's the hole we've put ourselves in, and that's we have no one to blame but ourselves for that, and that's tough, but we do know that there's a lot of season left to be played, and anything can happen, and there's still a chance for us, and we're definitely not checking out yet, and no matter what some people might be saying or whatever you hear, but we've definitely put ourselves in a hole, and now every game from here on out is critical, and we got to focus not on week 15, 16. We got to put all our focus in each week, in each game, in each day, and just keep it at that. So just take care of this week. And then then put all our effort, no matter what happens this week, put all our effort into the next game. And just keeping our mindset that, kind of keep the blinders on, to the games down the road, and just really just put all our energy and focus and concentration on one week at a time.
Dallas, could you just talk about your past battles with Rodney Harrison, who obviously isn't going to be there this week, and how that might affect your game or the game overall?
Yeah, Rodney's a great player, and he definitely gives a big lift for their defense. And I know everyone has, they always say next guy in, I think just on this side of the fence, I think Rodney's a tough guy for them to replace. He brought so much to their defense, so much versatility, and just that toughness that the defense always shows. So, I think he, you know, he was able, he allowed them to do a lot of different things. I mean, he can cover tight ends, he can cover, you know, he come and pester a wide receiver and stuff like that. So, when you don't have a guy like that, that's tough, you know, but they have great leadership on their defense, and they have guys that have been there and have been in, you know, situations like this before, and it, you know, that they're just, you know, rallying around each other and, you know, helping the younger guys out, and you know they're definitely, you know, not gonna, you know, use that as an excuse or anything. I mean, they're gonna be able to, you know, they're still gonna be able to do their thing and fly around and make plays as they do every game.
I guess if you were making a list of the things to feel good about with the Colts, your performance Monday would be one of them. Do you feel like you're hitting your stride after the knee problem?
Disappointed in my performance last week. You know, just had a few things, you know, especially the ball that went through my hands for the interception. That really was a turning point for them, and you know, it was very frustrating, and you know, things like that. It's just, you know, in tough, close games like that, every play counts, and you know, you can forget about what you did in the first, second quarter or whatever, and you know, it's you know, when it comes to the third and fourth quarter, that's when it counts, and your team's expecting you to make plays, and you know, I didn't make that one, and that's very frustrating. So, you know, I wasn't very, very satisfied with the performance, and you know, definitely got to keep working and keep getting better.
Dale, sorry if you've been asked this, but considering the hype that's generally around these games between you guys and the Patriots, and I guess in particular last year, the way it was, how different does this one feel?
You know, I don't think it's any different. You know, I think that's, you know, I think if you've been in this game long enough, I think, you know, anyone on the Patriots team would probably feel the same way. You don't, you know, you let everyone else kind of build up the game hype and all that. I mean, I think, you know, I think it's best for the players to really just kind of look at every game the same. Every game's important, and you put every effort, you put everything into it each week, and then when that game's over, it's over. You can't do anything about it. There's no what ifs, what if, you know, we should have done this, should have done that. You know, that's, there's no second chances. So, you know, it doesn't really matter records. It doesn't matter where we're playing, when we're playing, you know, all that. You face each opponent the same. You put all the effort. You put the same routine of game film, studying, you know, personnel and all that. And, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, for each team. So, you know, what's great about these matchups and why it's such a big, you know, it's always, you know, hyped up, and it's because, you know, both teams play, you know, play really well, and, you know, this year we haven't, and, you know, so that's different, but, you know, it's always a great challenge between us, and it's usually a close game fought to the end, and so, you know, definitely what, you know, people look for in football, and, you know, we look forward to as players.
Does that mean there's almost more at stake? I mean, whereas last year you had all the hype, and both teams were undefeated, everything else. Now, because of where you guys are, where they are, there might be more at stake than there has been in the past?
No, I mean, I think, you know, what I said in my answer was just that each game's the same. You know, every game's big, no matter what. So I think that's kind of what I was trying to explain, is that, you know, it doesn't matter what the record is. It doesn't matter, you know, where you're at in the division. You know, every game's big, and, you know, all the way from week 1 to week 16. So, you know, I think that's, anyway, that's how I handle every game or face every game. You know, every game's big. You know, it doesn't matter if you're facing 0-7 or 0-8 or whatever, and, you know, or an 8-0 team. You know, you prepare for them the same, and you give this, you know, you give the effort the same.
Well, Dallas, how have you found the new stadium? How fast is it? How does it fit with your style of play?
It's the new stadium is beautiful. You know, it's definitely different than the RCA Dome in many areas. But you know, I think it's definitely, you know, I think we're getting used to it, and I think we're getting comfortable with it. But it's you know, it's a great thing for the city and for the fans of for Indianapolis, and I think everyone, you know, even players are, you know, have been excited to play in it this year, but in the same sense, you know, definitely getting used to it, and you know, it took a little time, but you know, I think feeling very comfortable with it, but it's you know, it's a fun place to play a game.
Dallas, has Dominic Rhodes filled in for Joseph Addai, and to what degree does your offense change with Rhodes in the lineup?
Dami's a fantastic player. He just brings so much energy and just he's definitely a playmaker and I think that was kind of the point, when we brought him back this year. I think just, what he's been able to do in the past for us and so having him back and, especially in a situation like this with Joe getting hurt having that, just not really losing much. I mean, they're two different kind of style runners, so defense has to prepare differently for him. But Adami's, he's a spark plug. He can make a big play happen, and if there's poor blocking or if somebody screws up, he can make a guy miss. And Joe's as elusive, but just more of a power runner and hits the hole a little harder. But it's kind of one of those things that Dami's been a big addition for our team and just definitely brings in a lot of energy into the huddle.
It's Colts tight end Dallas Clark speaking with the New England media earlier this week about this week's matchup between his team, the Colts, and the New England Patriots this Sunday night on NBC, 8:15. Clark brought up a couple of interesting points during his line of questioning there with regards to, first off, how he'll be defended. He spoke glowingly about Rodney Harrison, who obviously is out for the year for New England with his quad injury. Last year's game, you may recall, the coaching staff for New England decided to put Harrison man up on Clark throughout that game, and it worked with considerable success, I'd say. Harrison did a great job of covering Clark throughout that game. Wasn't quite the factor that he could have been, but this year Clark won't have Harrison to worry about, so the question remains, who's going to cover him? A couple of options I think the Patriots might do in this game. One of the two safeties, either Brandon Merriweather or James Sanders, could do it. And I think they might be able to do that capably. It remains to be seen if they'll do it as capably as Rodney Harrison did. But with his size and strength and speed, that's going to be a tall order, especially with Clark's capabilities. I'm going to throw a little wrinkle at you here. How about rookie linebacker Jerod Mayo, who coming out of Tennessee last year and in the draft was...
Mayo.
Exactly, Paul. Was noted for his speed, particularly his lateral speed, but maybe not so much his downfield coverage. But I think he might have a chance to do that. Size-wise, he certainly matches up with Clark much better than either Merriweather or Sanders would. And I think he might have the speed to do it. We haven't really seen him in that role. He's been predominantly thrust in the middle, and he's like we mentioned earlier, he's leading the team in tackles right now. But Gary Guyton, another rookie linebacker, has been seeing considerable minutes more and more of late on the inside, sometimes along with Mayo in there. And if they do start out with a nickel to cover all of the Colts' weapons on offense, Gonzalez, Harrison, Wayne, Clark, obviously Addai coming back, I think Belichick always, of course, is known especially on his defenses for mixing things up for other quarterbacks. And maybe it's an experiment that won't work, but maybe they will try. Maybe they'll put the rookie out there on Dallas Clark. We'll just have to see. I know some of the guys on PFW in Progress earlier this week, we were talking about it, kind of felt the opposite way. They thought it wasn't really that plausible, but you never know. I'm not gonna say it's not. Because the more I think about it, the more I think it might be a way to go for them. We'll have to see on Sunday, of course. But that was one of the things that Clark brought up. Another point he talked about was the panic button and adversity that his Colts have been facing this year, and that they're not really quite ready to push the panic button. But at 3-4 this week, Tony Dungy kind of all but conceded the division to the 7-0 Titans after losing to them on Monday night. And you'd have to think at 3-4 now, they're if they're conceding the division for all intents and purposes, they're fighting for a wild card spot. And if they lose to New England, they're 3-5. They can't afford their season is pretty much over. So they're kind of he says they're not pushing the panic button, but I think they kind of are, in that they really have to win this game, not just for pride and what these games have meant in the past, but their season could be on the line here. If they win it, they're 4-4. They're right back in the thick of things, and they're only one game behind New England in any wild card chase. New England would be 5-3 at that point. So it's kind of it's obviously a must win. No game in this league isn't, but for the Colts, I think they are close to pushing the panic button, especially if they don't win this game. This could be a turning point for them. This could be the first time in since Peyton's rookie year, probably, that the Colts wouldn't make the playoffs if the season kept going out of control the way it uncharacteristically has so far for them this year. But that's just the Clark factor is just one of many offensive factors that the Patriots are going to have to try to find a way to hold this weekend, because, like we said earlier, the Colts are getting a die back, it looks like, off of his injury. He's practiced this week, and Dungy has said that he expects him and on the other side, Bob Sanders, to play. So, and with all the injuries and shuffling that they had to do in the secondary last week, New England, that is, it's going to be a tough matchup on offense. On the other side of the ball, though, Castle coming off a pretty decent week again, managing the game pretty well. The two interceptions he threw against the Rams, you can't really blame him for. One of them was a ball that went off of, I think it was off of Randy Moss's hands that got tipped by a defender and went into a safety's hands. And the other one, Wes Welker, was crossing over the on the left side and just kind of slipped and fell and gave the defender a chance to pick it off. So you really can't get on Castle for that. And he may have run into a stroke of good luck when the Colts announced this week that cornerback Marlon Jackson is now out for the year with his, I believe it's a knee injury. So that'll help somewhat on defense, on New England's offensive side for the Colts defense. But the return of Sanders, which it so far looks like is going to happen, that Indy defense is a completely different team when he's out there, especially against the run. And he's proven that time and time again. For a guy who's only about 5'8", barely 200 pounds, he plays much bigger than that. And from that safety position coming up and helping against the run, with New England's banged-up running back situation, that also brings up a concern about who's going to run the ball this week. Last week, the rookie Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis got the start and got a considerable amount of carries, did pretty well for himself, I think. Wasn't expected to shoulder the entire burden, of course. And good news, according to this week's participation report so far, is that Lamont Jordan has been out there and maybe closer to getting back. Sammy Morris, we know, is probably more, I think he even said this week, he's more like about 3 weeks away from maybe getting back into the rotation. But that's certainly good news because, after last year, his injury coming off of one of his best performances of the year and then losing him for the year, my immediate thought when he went down against, who was it, 2 weeks ago, San Diego, was that he might be out for the year. But it sounds like he's not going to be. It sounds like he'll be back pretty soon. But in the interim, if they can get Lamont Jordan back in the lineup, that's going to be a big help because it's kind of a lot to expect a rookie like Ben Jarvis to have to go into a hostile road environment like Indianapolis and try to get the bulk of the carries. Sure, Kevin Falk pitched in a lot too and obviously had the game-winning touchdown against the Rams, but that was in the passing game. Falk had some carries as well, but as we saw earlier this year when they had the 1-2, even 1-2-3 punch of Maroney, Morris, Falk, Jordan, that seemed to work for them. And the more running backs they can get back for this game, the better, because particularly if Sanders comes back and plays, maybe he won't be at 100% exactly, but still the fact that he's out there, it's going to be a factor that the Pats are going to have to try to find a remedy for. And you know, like I said, Green Ellis has shown that he's at least capable of contributing in this offense. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say I'd be comfortable having him carry the load for an extended period of time, or even against a team like the Colts defense, who, granted, isn't the same team that they've been in the past, but still, any given Sunday, and especially in this rivalry, in this series, can't score enough points. Can't score enough points because it's it always seems to be a shootout with these two teams. Bill Belichick earlier this week in one of his press conferences also credited the Colts defense for their outstanding pass rush.
I never said that.
Oh, I think you did, Bill. I was sitting right there in the front row. You were talking about Robert Mathis and Dwight Freeney, who I think you said were probably the best tandem of pass rushers that you'll see, or at least had seen so far this year, and maybe we'll see all season, barring any unforeseen developments. But this is going to be a big test for Castle as well. I think over the last few games, he is starting to show some signs of growth. They're baby steps, of course, but those can add up over time, and I think we're starting to see that. Particularly, I'll just give you a quick example from the Rams game. There were a couple of times where he had the pocket starting to collapse around him, and you know, maybe even a month ago, when that were to happen, he probably would have instinctively just tucked the ball under his arm and run with it. But he almost kind of looked like Tom Brady against the Rams a few times, because the pocket would start to collapse, and he would just keep his eyes focused downfield. He'd sense the rush. He would step up, just take that one little half step that Brady would often take to elude what was coming, keep his eyes focused downfield and scanning for his open receivers, pick his man, and fire the ball for a completion. And little things like that, I think, are going to make a big difference for this guy in his development and for his confidence. And seeing how he did that against the Rams, who you know, certainly don't have the most fearsome pass rush in the league, but they did a pretty good job of putting pressure when they had to, particularly later in the game when they started to get to him. And he started to handle it, and he's going to have to do more of that this week, because the Colts certainly aren't going to lay back. Are they going to blitz him a lot? I think they might play it safe at first and just try to see what he can do, because they haven't really faced him before, and maybe give him a little bit of a cushion, kind of like the Rams did for a while, and even some other games we saw that's kind of been, you know, the Jets. They kind of just would let Castle stand back there and throw to kind of see what they're getting out of him, what kind of day he might be having, and then sort of put the pressure on later as they go. But whenever they start to do that, whether it's right off the bat or later on, Castle's going to have to continue to show that sort of poise and pocket presence that he's been displaying over the past few weeks. And Bill even talked about it the other day, about how he's noticing that he's starting to come into his own, starting to get more comfortable back there in the pocket, and he still has a way to go, obviously, but he likes what he's seeing so far. On the other side of the ball, as we mentioned earlier, the key to winning this game and to beating Peyton Manning anytime is getting in his face, pressuring him, sacking him, making him force his throws early, or getting them to throw off target. Adalys Thomas last week against the Rams had another big game, came up with another sack, and is starting to come on a little more this year. Than had a little bit of a slow start to the year, and it's going to be imperative for him and the rest of the front seven to get some pressure on Manning throughout the game. I wouldn't even be surprised if they start blitzing him pretty quickly off the top. And when he addressed the media earlier this week at his locker, that was I believe among the topics that he discussed. Let's hear from AD in a second.
They're still the coach. I mean, it doesn't change. I think Peyton Manning's still the quarterback, still the same player, same coach. And so Tom's not here, and their record isn't what it usually be, you know. And so it is what it is. But, you know, none of that matters when it comes to Sunday. Only thing that matters is who plays the best on Sunday.
No, they've had two comeback fourth quarter wins. Just how dangerous can they still be for you guys?
I mean, they're a very explosive team. They can score in all three phases, as you've seen in the Texans game where they were down. And the next thing you know, they're celebrating. They're kneeling down on the ball with time left on the clock. So that just goes to show you how explosive they are.
Pass rush the last 2 weeks, especially against the Rams, seems to be operating at a pretty high level. Are you happy with the type of consistent pressure you're getting?
I think we can get more pressure, but I think at the same time, I think you just have to, I think the game dictates that, you know, the score, the situation down the distance. A lot of things dictate, you know, what it is that you, an opponent that you're going against. And so you got to stop the run or die. I think he'll be coming back and a Rose, either one, both of them are good backs. And so whoever it is in there, you know, you have to do that and play the situation that's in the game. You can't just say, okay, we're just going to do pass rush because they have a lot of run plays that, predicate on you playing the pass and then running the ball.
What's the key to keep things in this
game? First of all, you have to stop the run, and then, try to throw his timing off. It's a lot. You know, I don't think you can just take Peyton out of his game. I mean, he's so good at, you know, he avoids a rush. He stands in there, take hits, and throw the ball. And so we just have to, you know, play the hold down, you know, when you think it looks like it's bad, or, you know, you got to check down to the back and it goes like a 3 yard gain, it ends up being a 15 yard gain. And so I think you just have to just play the down throughout. You know, he's very good with redirecting his protection and different stuff. So we just have to stay true to our fundamentals and play hard.
How much did you and Richard did it help that you both put so much pressure on last week? It didn't seem like they could swing their protection outside together.
I mean, last week is done. You know, I mean, getting pressure on a quarterback is important, but at the same time, you know, that doesn't go without DBs covering it. So it takes all 11 guys. You know, I think every sack that we had came off of some kind of pressure from somewhere else, and so I think that's just the main thing. Is just everybody's just doing your job, and then being where you're supposed to be, and this opportunity presents itself to make a play, then you make it.
What kind of unique threat is Dallas Clark, especially when you add in the explosive wideouts that they have? How tough is it to defend a tight end like that?
Well, he's very tough to cover. You know, he runs good routes, stretches the field vertically, and he comes a key part in the running game and getting a couple of key blocks. And so you have your hands full with him. And so you got to, I think, just try to stay true to it and try to not let him beat you with down the field plays.
That's Patriots linebacker Adalis Thomas talking with members of the New England media outside his locker earlier this week.
Yoo-hoo! Baxter!
Oh, yes, somebody's at the door. Sounds like it's Russell Baxter from ESPN. Russell, how you doing, my friend?
I'm great. Obviously, it's not Mr. Rook.
No, I'm starting to develop a complex, Russell. This is the second week in a row now that John's left me flat here in the studio while he runs off and does his college football broadcasting job.
I think that's really what he's doing.
Can anyone really verify that? I don't know what he says.
Yeah, I don't know.
I, as a native, a proud son of the city of Philadelphia.
Oh, congratulations, by the way.
Having a good night last night. Mm-hmm. I won't say I'm the biggest baseball fan, but it brings back memory. I can remember sitting in my living room with my parents and my brothers and sisters about 28 years ago when Tug McGraw jumped up in the air. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a nice reminiscing moment. I mean, when you're a Philly fan, you only win twice in 126 years.
Yeah.
You take them when you can get them. But I have to call my cousin Joey, who lives right around the whose father and his parents, God rest their souls, but a block off of Broad Street is where he grew up. And I know he has moles down there, and I'm willing to bet that John Rook is either in the middle of Broad Street mm-hmm. with something other than a Mountain Dew, and he's not there early for the Mummers Parade, if you know what I mean.
Well, wherever he is, we miss him, but we'll forge ahead here.
I don't know that we miss him, to be honest with you.
Really?
Russell is by far the most popular segment of his entire program.
Well, that's true. That's true. That's true.
Might be time to check out those ratings a little more carefully. So,
Russell, don't you miss the old Phillies powder blue and maroon uniforms?
Yeah, I mean, it's just funny how things, you know, the Phillies fortunately have not drastically changed their uniforms like some other team. God, I miss the Astros.
God, they were hideous.
Joseph in the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat version that they used to have.
And it was almost as bad as the
Denver Nuggets. Speaking of, by the way, when the Phillies won their only other previous World Series, I'll dip a little into baseball here. I think people will remember when the series used to be five games, you know, the NLCS, before there was a wild card round and so on.
Yep.
You know, people will tell you that five-game series between the Phillies and the Astros in 1980 had more – I mean, I know we had this craziness with the suspension, but that series had more crazy moments. Phillies fell down 2-1, and it looked like it was going to be another bomb-out year for them, and they wound up winning the last two games in Houston. I want to say there was a triple play in that series.
Wow.
There was all kinds of nutty stuff that went on and so on, and it was very, very clutch Phillies, and of course they beat the Royals and so on. But I used to like the, you know, one of the great pitchers of his time, and also one of the, you know, who sadly had, you know, problems, medical problems, was J.R. Richard.
Yep.
Was, I mean, you want to talk about a man who could bring it. That was I never saw him pitch in person in Philly. You know, I used to go to the Phillies games 30 years ago, but he would be not be the one a kind of guy I'd want to cross in front of the plate against.
Yeah.
That
don't
was,
crowd the plate. Don't crowd the plate there.
And it's been said to me, that was some serious you-know-what
that
was coming in from him.
So. Yeah. Well, good. So not just NFL insight here. We got some MLB talk.
Okay, I think I'm shot now. So.
All right. Well, some late-breaking news we got as the show was starting that we didn't get to talk about in the first 45 minutes here was kind of – not totally surprising news, but it has finally come down. Vince Wilfork, Patriots nose tackle, has been fined $35,000 by the league for his hit to the head of Jay Cutler, Broncos quarterback, in the team's Monday night contest a couple of weeks ago. He had met with the commissioner at the league office, I believe, Tuesday. Came back from that, addressed the media the next day, and was actually very positive about how he felt that meeting went, and didn't expect to get suspended, or at least it didn't appear that he was going to be suspended, because typically when these rulings come down, they come down at the end of the day on a Tuesday so that a team can kind of get prepared for who they're going to have going into that weekend. And when Wednesday rolled around, Vince was still around, and they hadn't made any announcement. So he wasn't going to get suspended, but not surprising that he ended up getting a fine. Did you happen to see the play? Do you remember the play, Russell, and what were your thoughts
on it? Vaguely, I'm sure we'll be rerunning it tonight on SportsCenter and so on. But, you know, sometimes, and this used to happen in the day with somebody like Mark Carrier, who used to get fined a lot for late hits and so on.
Yep.
Now, of course, a lot of things get fined. But, you know, Vince, I think, how many times was he fined last year?
Four times, I believe.
Like four times and so on. Sometimes, unfortunately, you know, like I said, I'd have to see the hit again to really judge on it. But sometimes you're, you know, guilt by association if it necessarily is a violation.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's almost irresponsible of me to say without seeing the hit again.
Yeah.
But it seems like, you know,
and
it seems like he's one of the only other people on the New England defense, you know, that I'm talking about within the last couple of years. You know, I've seen Rodney Harrison fined as much in latter years or so on as maybe he did when he was with the Chargers and so on. It seems like this has been kind of something that happens with Vince. So, but I'd have to really see the play again to really actually give it a fair assessment. But, you know, here, simply put, Eric, I mean, you know, fines for hits, fines for criticizing officials, fines for verbally abusing officials, fines for face mask. I actually have gone and done a list just this year alone, because I have no way of doing past years. And, you know, there's like five or six fines a week. And it's for, like, stuff that is – we're not even talking about the uniform violation.
I was just going to say, yeah, that those
know,
probably are –
I'm talking about strictly for instance, Plexico Burris got fined $5,000 in the 49ers game for throwing the ball in the stands. Mm-hmm. 49 – I mean –
I kind of look at those as kind of like
$20,000 for verbal abuse of an official, and $20,000 for more criticism of an official, and so on.
Just in that game, just from that game,
That's not even including the suspended game,
mm-hmm.
in which he was suspended, which he lost a paycheck for when they played Seattle. that's a total different issue. That's a team issue, and so on. But just, I mean, fines around the league are up. I mean, there was a Pittsburgh-Jacksonville game earlier this year where you saw numerous Steelers fined for taunting, unsportsmanlike conduct. I mean, you know,
here's the question:
the rabbit ears are up from the commissioner's office.
But here's the question I have: are these fines having their intended effect? Are they working? Are they deterring the crimes that they're for which they're being assessed?
Well, I would have to look at the list, but right off the top of my head, what I haven't seen so far, although I will say Hines Ward in back-to-back games, Hines Ward, I think right off the top of my head, again, off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody who's been on this list twice. If that helps, if that answers your question.
Aside from Burris and the,
well,
and the,
Burris,
the suspension
but that's
game.
The same game.
Yeah, but yeah.
Okay, I mean, Richie Incognito got fined, I think it was a total of $35,000 for verbal abuse of official, pulling a face mask, and then there was, and I can't think what the third, he had three fines in the one game.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking about once you've been nailed, doesn't seem like somebody's doing again. Of course, Hines Ward got fined back-to-back games for, you know, unnecessary roughness, and ironically, the game in which he broke Keith Rivers' jaw,
yeah,
which was a clean hit,
mm-hmm.
okay, and the Bengals himself now upset about that. No fine for that. So, yeah, I get a feeling this is gonna be one of those things that the league takes even a closer look at during the offseason. Maybe they can have the meetings in London, as a matter of fact, and sit and discuss it over there and so on. And just, and maybe they can rectify that situation, even
that's a whole other
natives
topic.
Of London saw a 69-point game last week. You know, there was obviously
– very entertaining game. Yeah.
I mean –
they picked a good one
last year,
to have
you know, last year was funny. You saw Miami and the Giants, which – wasn't a very entertaining game, very sloppy game.
Mm-hmm.
And who would have known that in one afternoon you were going to see the worst team in the league and the Super Bowl champion?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know where San Diego and New Orleans are headed other than maybe some more 32-37 games because both can move the football and neither one can play great defense.
Right.
You know, as we get sidetracked, that's what I love about doing the show. We can just go on and on about different things.
We end up back in the same place eventually.
Yeah,
anyway,
it's kind of like filling the sink, and eventually it's all going to go down the drain.
But my point in bringing up the question of whether or not the fines are working is particularly Wilfork's case.
Right.
You saw a guy who last year had four of these. Okay, I know, like you said, so far this year, maybe nobody's committed the a penalty, you know, gotten fined more than once so far this year. But is it just for that particular season, that reward, or shouldn't these fines have some sort of weight so that a player really has to affect any sort of inappropriate behavior that he brings to the field, whether it's intentional or not? He has to know that if he goes out and does what he did before, there are going to be serious ramifications, and he's going to have to, like you said, Rodney Harrison in later years of his career was being fined a lot less than he was earlier in his career, and I think that had a lot to do with the fact that he'd been fined so many times, and it finally started to sink in, and maybe, you know, he wasn't necessarily backing away from hitting people after a play, but something in his play led to a conscious effort of his not being fined as much as he was before, and so far, Vince, you know, great a guy as he is, because he, you know, we see him all the time and we talk to him pretty frequently, just being around the team. Great guy, and his teammates love him. But if he's establishing a pattern here of getting fined every season at least once or more than once, isn't that a problem that these fines aren't really addressing? At least in his case.
Yeah. Well, I kind of. This year, Eric, want to almost take this year separately because, you know, again, initial glance of thinking about fines from last year. And the problem with the fines is, you know, the NFL doesn't run out and report all of them. You know, you can get a hold of the league office and, if, you know, there's word of a fine, they'll confirm it for you. But they aren't constantly sending out a list of who was fined this week. And I don't think when they do the fines, they don't really differentiate a fine for misconduct opposed to a fine for misconduct. I think all the fines go in the same pool in terms of the way the money gets distributed and so on to wherever it goes, charities, et cetera, et cetera. But just at initial glance, it seems heavier than usual. Maybe that's because we're hearing more about them. You know, I might be way off on that, but I think that's one of the reasons we started tracking them here is, and we don't even know if we have the exact amount, but it just seems like it's heavier this year. You know, the thing that also strikes me is the blow to Jay was where? Refresh my memory.
Hit him. Hit to the head. It was hit to the head. But it was so far after the play that I believe that when the Patriots looked at it, Belichick said he didn't see anything on there.
Right.
But that the Broncos may have had either a different angle or they may have rolled on that play a little bit longer so that you finally did get to see it.
Right.
So from Bill's perspective, he didn't really see anything on the Patriots tape that indicated that there was any problem. But obviously there is somewhere. But yeah, it was a blow to the head.
Right.
Believe it was an elbow that he.
Right. The point I was going to make is because again, I'd have to see the play again. I really can't remember right now. Is I think some of the things that Vince got fined for last year. Refresh my memory. Mm-hmm. Weren't they low blows?
Well, the one against Lossman was.
Yeah.
But there was another one against the Giants where he.
That was a whole different thing. I mean, listen, you know, I remember that was the last game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you tell
the
me that.
Last regular season game.
And that was almost like a close to a fist fight.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
that was,
exactly.
You know, that was a different situation and so on.
But
so.
He had another one of those in that same game. Where he poked his finger up under the
right.
mask of one of his opponents
right.
while they were jawing at each other.
Right.
And
well,
so,
that also will tell you, like we talked about earlier, it's probably maybe why he's not necessarily getting the benefit of the doubt either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because sometimes when you see something like that, it sticks in your mind. Everybody's a human being and so on. And I firmly believe that's what used to happen to Mark Carrier,
mm-hmm.
you know, who seemed like he was constantly being fined
mm-hmm.
for late hits. And there wasn't much, you know, every time. It was almost like, here comes a fine. What did Mark Carrier do this time?
Yeah.
And they see, he almost became like the poster boy for it and so on. And then everything seemed to kind of, you know, die down a little bit. But again, this year there seems to just be an accelerated effort. And again, you know, abusive officials, unsportsmanlike conduct. I mean, there is really a priority here of, you know, we already know we're trying to clean up the league off the field.
Yep.
Seems like they're really making a concerted effort, this regime, to clean it up on the field as well. So, but again, you're going to have, I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about this in the next 3 months where there's going to be one, because I will say this, I also saw a game with the Eagles and the Falcons where Trent Cole sacked
Matt Ryan
last mm-hmm. week.
Yep.
And you can't tell me that was roughing the passer. At all.
I didn't see the play.
Matt still had the ball in his hand. He was going down. They called roughing the passer. I'm sure you'll. Well, by the time I see Vince Wilfork again, you'll get to see Trent Cole again.
Yeah, fair enough.
And, it, you know, when you look at that, and I, you know, the guys I sit with in the room and so on, you know, and, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, unbiasedly, you have got to be kidding.
They were aghast at the call.
Yeah. I mean, in the process of throwing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing if you take two steps and launch yourself, if you take two steps and hit to the head. I mean, a lot of times we grunt and groan like, how can you call that? But if you hit anybody to the head, it's going to get called.
Mm-hmm.
This was not the case. Matt Ryan was in the process of throwing. And I don't know how in your right mind you could have made a call like that was in the Eagles-Falcons game last week. I'm sure people who are listening here know exactly what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, in any event, the Wilfork play, I think Wilfork got away with... he got off a little bit easier than I think I might have expected, and I think he's fortunate in that regard. I just wonder if a $35,000 fine, as big as it might seem to most of the rest of us, how much of an impact it really has on an NFL player who makes, you know, so many times more than that, and whether or not it'll change any behavior or not. That's just me wondering aloud, but. We'll have to see. I think the Pats are lucky that they'll still have him for this Sunday's game against Indianapolis.
The traditional Week 9 tilt.
Yeah, four in a row now.
Yes.
Four in a row at this juncture in the season, and another primetime matchup. They were lucky, I think, to come away with a win against the Rams, if only for the fact that their secondary was getting thrown on all day, and they kept falling to injury, it seemed, almost all day, and had to keep shuffling the lineup back there for much of the game. Before we get to Indy, quickly, your thoughts on the win over the Rams.
Well, listen, they did what they had to do. I mean, they were playing a Rams team that had a regained sense of confidence. They had only given up 31 points in beating the Redskins and the Cowboys. Remember, they had given up at least 31 points their first four games.
Yeah, they were atrocious.
Really, really bad doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think New England survived a decent day by Mark Bulger, threw for over 300 yards. Mm-hmm. You know, the problem with the Patriots, and I don't know if it's going to hold up this week because I'm not sure what the passing game of Indy is going to bring, but they have been giving up a lot of big pass plays. Mm-hmm. And it's not something you saw last year. Remember last year, of course, they had leads, and you were able to turn the pass rushers loose. Take this number for what it's worth.
Okay.
They've already, in seven games this year, given up 10 pass plays of 30 or more yards.
The Colts have.
No, the Patriots.
I'm sorry, yeah, the Patriots.
The Patriots. They gave up only 7 all of last year.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
yeah.
That's a big difference, and obviously with all the wholesale changes they had in the secondary, mm-hmm. and you're not necessarily getting the pass rush that you had a year ago. But, of course, you also don't have the big play strike ability that they have minus Tom Brady, mm-hmm. so they're not able to put teams on their heels. The monumental difference in any kind of football, especially pro football, is the difference of throwing when you want to and throwing when you have to. And, you know, a lot of times the Patriots last year forced teams to throw when they didn't want to, mm-hmm. but were forced to in order to catch up.
Right.
That is not necessarily the case this year.
Right. And I think they're going to have to put themselves in that position against the Colts this Sunday to have a better chance of beating the Colts, I think.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. Their pass rush has to – listen, they have a very common denominator in the two games they lost this year, one to Miami and one to San Diego. They have no sacks in either of those two games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They have 14 sacks in the other five games that they won. So getting to Peyton Manning, which we know is never easy,
mm-hmm.
And even the times that the Patriots have beaten him, they haven't necessarily put up big sack numbers. Now, if they picked him off quite a few times, you know, see Ty Law in the AFC Championship game,
right.
Yes, but getting some heat on him, I think, is imperative. And it's going to be interesting because the Colts, you know, who are, you know, what are you going to say about that whole division right now? They're all four games out of the surging Tennessee Titans.
Right.
And, you know, it's maybe, is it, I don't want to say it's a moot point, but four games out for any team with nine games to play makes it hard to win a division, of course.
Yeah.
Both of these teams have won their divisions, you know, Colts and the Patriots 5 years in a row. Both of them are in struggles this year. At least the Patriots are tied for first place in their division. But
and the Colts have lost to the division-leading Titans already, so that puts them sort of 4.5 games behind.
Absolutely. And, by the way, a home loss to Jacksonville.
Right.
Which means they have to play Jacksonville again
at Jacksonville.
So they have really kind of put themselves behind the eight ball. No doubt about it.
Right. So they're for all intents and purposes, the Colts are in a must win against the Pats. Not that, and I said this before, not that any game in the NFL is not a must win, but when you look at the ramifications down the road, if the Colts don't get this game, their season really could be over.
Well, I mean, simply put, Eric, last week I thought it was a must game for them if they were going to win the division. Okay, I mean,
and Tony Dungy.
I'm not a person who throws out must game at 08,
mm-hmm.
in week 8.
In week 8, yeah.
But this could be more of a must game in terms of playoffs.
Sure.
If they start throwing the 3-4 and the 3-5,
right?
With everybody, there's a lot of other teams at 3-4.
Yeah, they'll be struggling to get to 500 at that point.
Right. I mean, unless you plan on going on a long run. And listen, this team is capable of going on. Listen, you know what's interesting about this? They are 3-4 right now.
Mm-hmm.
The last 3 years that the Colts have gotten to this Week 9 game against the Patriots,
mm-hmm.
they were 7-0, 7-0, and 7-0.
Interesting how that works, huh?
Yeah, I mean, they have always started out incredibly strong. Remember, the last 3 years, 7-0 last year, 9-0
mm-hmm.
the year before when they won the Super Bowl, 13-0 the year before that when they, you know, had the best record in the league but lost to Pittsburgh in the divisional playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But always strong, and now lost four of their first seven games this season.
And part of that has to be due to the amount of injuries they've suffered. They got more bad news today when the announcement of Marlon Jackson being out for the rest of the year with the knee injury. But it looks like they're going to get Bob Sanders back on defense. He was out for the last, what was it, about 6 weeks now, I think, and he and Joseph Addai on the other side of the ball practicing this week, and Tony Dungy said that they have a good week of practice. They're going to play. And I said earlier, I regardless of how they practice, I think they're going to play anyway this week because it's the Patriots. And like you said, it's more of a must-win because of the playoff ramifications for this game. But losing Jackson on the corner, gaining Sanders at safety helps not only their pass game but their running game. They're a totally different team against the run when Bob Sanders is in there.
Oh, no doubt. And helping also the running game is the addition of Joseph Addai, who looks like he might be back this week
right.
as well. But you know what? It's funny. You know, even though the Colts get guys back, they look like they're going to lose another guy. So mm-hmm. they just can't seem to get themselves on even kilter this year. And Peyton Manning, listen, you know, you watch him play, and, you know, just something seems to be off with their whole passing game this year. Listen, we know he missed the preseason,
mm-hmm.
recovering from his own knee surgery and so on.
Yep.
He is a timing guy. There seems to be a sense of lack of timing with them. Right? They've only had one really, and even then against Baltimore, even though they beat Baltimore fairly handily,
mm-hmm.
You know, it just didn't seem like they were on the same page most of this season with the passing game and so on. Him and Marvin Harrison, I think, is very, very noticeable. You know, this
sure.
is one of the
yeah.
this is the most productive quarterback to a receiver tandem in the history of the NFL in terms of the yards,
right.
receptions, and touchdowns, and yet you just seem like Marvin's either two steps ahead or two steps behind. Marvin also looks like he's lost a little bit of a step as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think listen, Peyton Manning's already thrown 9 interceptions this year
mm-hmm.
in 7 games. He threw 14 all of last year.
Right.
In more than half his games this year, Eric, he's thrown multiple interceptions. And that's, you know, that's Peyton Manning as a rookie, not Peyton Manning as the guy we know now.
Yeah, we haven't seen this kind of play from him since then. You're right. Because in his second year, they went 13-3, right? They completely turned it around, made the playoffs, and ever since then, they've been on this ridiculous roll where they've just been almost unstoppable on offense. And at times, their defense hasn't been that great, but they've gotten certainly a lot better the last few years, gotten a lot faster. But the injuries have mounted up, and you're right. On either side of the ball, they're not quite the same team. And still, saying that, they're 3-4, and this is still a dangerous game for New England.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. I think when these teams get hooked up, I think this is this is the ninth time in 6 years. You do the math. That means these teams have met in the playoffs.
Sure.
And so on, because they're not teams that are in the same division anymore,
mm-hmm.
Like the old days of the AFC East and so on. And there's always something special about this game. And I think that's why the NFL treats this game these years like it used to treat Dallas and San Francisco in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm. Interesting little note there, that now that you mentioned that. I believe next year, the way the schedule is lined up, New England has to play an AFC South team on the road. And as you and I and a lot of our listeners know, the schedule on those yet-to-be-determined games is determined by where you finish. Now, if things continue as they are, the Colts and Patriots aren't going to line up in the same spot in their respective divisions, which means we're not going to have a Week 9 Indy-New England game next year.
No,
if it continues that way.
The Colts and the Patriots both finish second.
Right.
Now, how funny would that be?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which right now the Patriots, of course, are tied for first,
mm-hmm.
ahead on tiebreakers, but it's hard to do tiebreakers now because
they still haven't even played the Bills. So, right.
And so on. But, you know, how funny would it be if New England finishes second, say, at 11-5,
mm-hmm.
and the Colts finish second at 9-7.
Mm-hmm.
And don't make the playoffs, and New England does make the playoffs,
yeah.
and yet, still again, they wind up playing each other.
Yeah.
Get the feeling it might not be in Week 9 a fifth straight year.
You think?
Not sure.
Why break tradition
at this
point?
I'd have to see how the teams finish, Eric.
But speaking of the standings in the division, last week we talked about if things worked out the way they should, New England would be 5-2, and if the Dolphins took care of business against the Bills would be 5-2, and there'd be a tie at the top of the AFC East. Guess what happened? That exact scenario played out. So now, as you said, we've got two teams, Buffalo and New England, tied at the top of the division.
And actually a week away from their big meeting.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, in New England.
Right.
Fact, so.
And wasn't totally surprised that Miami won that game last week over Buffalo. But that was the kind of game that Buffalo needed to win just to prove that they were... See, they're a young team still trying to figure out how to win, and a game like that would have helped their confidence enormously, I thought. going on the road against a division opponent, fighting to keep their place atop the division, and they didn't get it done. And now they're in a tie with New England. And like you said, regardless of what happens this week against Indianapolis, that's going to be a key game next week when Buffalo comes to town, just because of the playoff and seeding implications.
Yes, and it will be interesting to see if Buffalo, who last week kind of self-destructed in the fourth quarter, they had 4 turnovers, I believe, in the final quarter, mm-hmm. and let that game get away. But it wasn't like Miami came out with that wildcat offense and plowed them over. It was actually Chad Pennington that passed them silly. And even though he didn't score a touchdown, Ted Ginn, 7 catches for 175 yards, really took advantage of a Buffalo secondary a little banged up, not terribly banged up, but Miami's much improved.
You think he's becoming a legitimate threat for them again?
I'm not sure yet. I think we have found in this league that wide receivers don't necessarily flourish as rookies, drafted to be a big wide receiver threat. I mean, he was really drafted as a return threat with the ability to be a wide receiver.
Pretty high.
So I think that's two totally different things. Mm. But on the other hand, the story out of Miami has been the play of Chad Pennington, who looks very, very revived this year. I don't know if it's the weather down there or being back under the Parcells regime or whatever it is. Remember,
warm weather could
Parcells.
Be helping his arthritis, you know?
Yeah, it could be. But, I mean, the one thing you know is about Pennington, he's been extremely accurate, which he always has been. Mm-hmm. But he looks like he has a little more zip on the passes this year.
Yeah.
And he seems like he's throwing the ball downfield with a little more confidence. As he has in previous years.
Yeah, he might finally be over that shoulder surgery that he had a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it could
ago.
Be. Sometimes I think we forget what happens. And
these are major surgeries that these
yeah,
guys
and,
are having.
Yeah, and people forget. And Pennington's never been, as you know, he's not exactly Joe Namath with his arm.
Right.
But he's always been very, very accurate. I mean, in recent years, he could have called it delay of game,
mm-hmm.
When he threw an out pattern. But this year... You see, like, even as much as the Wildcat offense ran the Patriots silly in that game up in Foxborough, Chad Pennington put up big numbers in that game when he played. I mean, it wasn't just the running game that did in the Patriots. It was passing. You know what's funny is Miami's 3-4, but they're 2-1 in the division, yep. having beaten New England and Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to throw them into the mix as well. I mean, obviously it's a long way to go. And they're, 2 games out of first, but
right. all you have to do is win your division.
It's one thing to be 3-4 and 0-3 in the division.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to be 3-4 and 2-1 in the division.
Yeah, because you're still right in it.
All right.
You're still right in it. And now Buffalo has the second of 3 division games in a row here, this Sunday against the Jets. Buffalo's at home this week, though. But another important game because it's in the division. How do you see this matchup? Especially with Favre coming off a horrible performance against the Chiefs. They were lucky to pull that game out, but it was Favre's miscues that almost cost him that game.
Yes, 7 interceptions in the last 3 games, 2 or more in each of those games. Kind of somewhat forgotten is that game where he threw the 6 touchdowns and 1 pick against the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, he's gone a little south. Listen, he didn't play that well against Oakland either when they lost.
Mm-hmm.
That offense just doesn't seem like it's on the right page. And I think they took advantage of a very young Kansas City team and managed to literally just pull one out by the skin of their teeth. Mm-hmm. But they did not play well against Oakland, didn't play well against Kansas City. They've had trouble with Buffalo even when they were, even when the Jets were good,
mm-hmm.
and Buffalo was not. And, I think Buffalo really needs to bounce back here in the worst way. I don't think they can afford to lose a game at home in the division after losing at Miami and then having New England comes up,
mm-hmm.
could turn into a spiraling effect for the Buffalo Bills, and that 5-1 start can get forgotten real, real quickly,
mm-hmm.
because then it starts playing on your confidence. Because if you go, you go 9-7, and if you're 1-5 in the division, it doesn't mean a hell of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Buffalo, in the worst way, needs to stop the bleeding, and I think if their running game gets it cranked up and their offensive line plays like it's capable of playing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good Jets defense, but not a great Jets defense. I know Tyler Thigpen, of all people, found a lot of holes throwing the football against the Jets last week. Threw for 280 yards, as a matter of fact.
That's pretty impressive for a guy who's never really played.
Right, and I just think that they could definitely do some damage against the Jets defense. The Jets, to me, are just a roller coaster team right now. who they look like, unless they get hot, which they haven't shown any signs of being hot, of a team that's destined to go anywhere from 7-9 to 9-7.
Yeah. I had them preseason picked at 8-8, and mostly because of Favre, actually, because I think we're now starting to see the Favre that we've seen the last 4, maybe 5 years, with the exception of last year's, you know, wild run that they had winning all those games. But, you know, Favre's not the Favre that he was earlier in his career in Green Bay.
No, and I think it shows you the quality of the receivers that he had in Green Bay. And he, I don't know, other than Lavernius Coles, and Jericho Cotri is an up-and-comer, but he had some real talent in Green Bay with Donald Driver, who's a Pro Bowler, Greg Jennings, who is a real up-and-comer, might even already be there already.
Yeah, I think at this point,
and so on, and support from the tight ends, and yeah, that's the one thing. You just haven't seen Brett necessarily spreading the ball around like he did in Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost, he just doesn't see, the Jets themselves don't look like a comfortable football team. I think that's the best way to put it.
And, you know, we also kind of tend to forget this, but because he's such a veteran and he's had such experience in this league running that Packers offense, but he was coming to a new team at the very end of, almost at the last possible minute to be in time for the season. He got in all his preseason games with the Jets, but he's still learning this offense.
It's only
halfway through the season, and he's had what is it now? Barely 12 games, if you include the preseason games, to learn an entirely new offense. I'm sure you know there are similarities. Players say that all the time. It's basically the same. It's different terminology.
Yeah, it's similar. The ball is brown.
Yeah.
It goes a certain way and so on. But for people who don't think that systems matter, they really do. And I'm not saying it's drastic difference and so on, but, you know, he in a way was his own system up in Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, the things, and he's doing some of that with Lavernius Coles and some of the receivers. He's able to teach those young kids some tricks and so on, but it's just a different ball game to go from what they were doing up there and pretty much doing the same thing and being able to do a lot of that on his own at times to what he's doing here in New York.
And one of the knocks I had on him when he was in that weird soap opera of an offseason where he was searching for a new team was that, you know, he had gotten to the point in Green Bay where he didn't have to put in the extra amount of film study and, you know, the classroom time to learn his offense.
Right.
And he had gotten to a point in his career where, you know, he wanted to go fishing or hunting or do other things in the offseason or even before, you know, the week of a game. He could afford to do that because he knew the offense and he had talent around him. If he was going to go to any new team, it's hard at that point when you get used to that kind of lifestyle to suddenly turn it on again and say, okay, I'm going to go in the film room every day. I'm going to study. I'm going to learn this offense. I'm going to work with my receivers after practice. Put in that type of dedication with a new team, a new system, and new players. I just didn't think he'd have the energy to do that or the desire to do that with whatever team he was going to go to. And I think we're starting to see the fruits of that. Negatively in the way he's been playing in New York the last few weeks.
I agree. I don't think I could say it any better than that. It's a long football season, but it can get short real quickly.
Yeah. The other team in the AFC East, Miami, had that win, as we talked about, over Buffalo last week, but they're going to Denver, another team that's had its struggles this year. But Denver's never really an easy place to play. Given the way New England ran all over the Broncos defense, though, a couple of weeks ago, you got to wonder if Miami's going to come out with that wildcat spread. It's got so many names now; I don't even know what to call it anymore.
Well, I'm sure there's some people who are calling it some other names that we can't say it on the air as well.
Probably, yeah.
But you know what's funny about that? And Eric, I'm going to do a quick about face on you. I'm going to talk about Miami and Denver, and then if we can get to New England and Indy, because this is called live radio. I've kind of had something pop up here in the office that I have to attend to.
Oh, okay.
And so on. But let me throw out something about Miami and Denver first.
Yep.
You know, ever since the Patriots game and the San Diego game, the Dolphins' rushing numbers have gone down every week as far as yards rushing.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean that they're losing games, but I think they're using less and less of what they're doing in terms of that wildcat offense. I think they're only using it periodically now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now that they're kind of getting to know each other as a football team, I think that's what's making them a little dangerous. Plus, one aspect that nobody talks about is Miami's defense, which is much improved on the defensive front. They're getting to the quarterback a little more often. Who would have thought that Miami's defense would be better minus Zach Thomas and minus Jason Taylor?
Yeah.
But they're kind of playing better. And they're getting support from the offense. But, you know, Chad Pennington is really, you know, it's not all about the quarterback, but he has brought some really, really nice stability to a young team. I think there's a confidence factor there as well.
Sure.
On the Denver side, well, listen, you saw them 2 weeks ago. Their defense is horrendous. And it almost looks like a typical Denver start that gets out of the box 2-0 and 3-0. And then, unless San Diego does something, Denver could wind up in the playoffs. The way that division's going, I wouldn't be surprised if the Raiders came back and won the division.
It's not out of the question at this point.
Yeah, it's not out of the question at all. So, I'll be interested to see what happens with, Miami as far as can they sustain this? Can they get back to 500? And if Denver's defense is really headed south for the entire year.
And you mentioned the perhaps underrated Miami defense. Joey Porter just named today NFL Defensive Player of the Month.
Real quick segue here. The Pittsburgh Steelers must know something about linebackers. They've got two guys on the outside, James Harrison and Lar Woodley, who have 8.5 sacks and 7.5 respectively.
Yep.
And the guy who they jettisoned has 10.5 sacks and is leading the league.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, it must. I don't know what they're serving in Pittsburgh. I know it's more than Iron City beer and sandwiches with French fries on it. So.
Sounds like something John would have for a pregame meal.
Oh, I'm all in touch with that.
Porter's finally putting his money where his mouth is. I think a lot of the times over the years he's talked more than he's walked, if you will. Okay, you said you had some business to attend to at the office?
Yes, I do. If you want to do a quick wrap on New England Indy, because I don't want to leave you completely in the lurch and so on.
No, I appreciate it. So
welcome to live radio at ESPN.
that's what we're used to. A lot of injuries on both sides of the ball, for both teams as well, too. Who do you think has the edge and why in this game Sunday night?
I think New England is playing better football, but, you know, we have also seen, you know, this almost looks like a New England-San Diego game from a couple of weeks ago where they go on the road and are facing a team that really, really has to win. I'm not saying New England doesn't have to win. Listen, the Colts, up until last year, had beaten the Patriots 3 times in a row. It is still Peyton Manning. It is still a secondary that Mark Bulger kind of exploited last week. The thing I'm going to be looking at is the Colts pass rush with Robert Mathis and Dwight Freeney. The Patriots have given up a lot, 29 sacks this year already?
Yeah,
And a lot of that has to do with Castle's inexperience. I know New England is Indianapolis is a little banged up in the secondary and so on, but unless New England's offense wears down the Colts into the fourth quarter, which I don't think has really been their MO this year, I just kind of like Indy to spring back to life here and maybe make one last stand to at least get back to 500.
Okay. So I don't know if we normally do this, but do you have a score prediction for this game?
Let's see.
Come on, Russell.
I'm certainly not going to go 38-34 like the AFC Championship game a couple years ago and so on. But this seems like a 26-17 Indianapolis type of game.
Oh. Okay.
Okay, now 26 can mean 4 field goals and two touchdowns.
Right.
Okay. Right. But that's, I think, what I'm kind of looking at. But I think the difference is the Indianapolis pass rush against Matt Castle.
So not 8 field goals and a safety, Russell?
They're not.
It's Gary chiming in after
a while. What did we see in New York last week? You know, if you're not watching, we saw a blackjack game, as Chris Berman likes to say. 4 field goals, a safety, and a touchdown get you to 21.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will be there. The PFW crew will be there on Sunday night, and Russell, as always, we'll talk to you about it next Thursday. I'm not going to predict that John's going to be here next week because I don't know his schedule anymore, and he seems
well.
To
the
be,
next 5 minutes,
seems to
I'm
be
not
sending
be
me
here
a message.
Either, so we have something in common.
He seems to be sending me a message, but we appreciate having you on, and we know you got other matters to attend to. So Russell, thanks again, and we'll talk to you in a week.
All right. Terrific, Gary. Thanks. Great fun.
All right. Enjoy the games this weekend. That's Russell Baxter from ESPN, their NFL guru, whose job it is, as John always says, to talk football 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Too bad John doesn't follow that policy.
Oh, Wow, shots from afar. But we'll have more on the playbook right after this.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Well, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
The Super League Championship in the history books. The Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup Championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution ticket office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twelman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst, are you kidding me?
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Well, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba Hot Taco Nacho or Naked Burrito Bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Welcome back to Patriots Playbook. I'm Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly.
Hey, Eric.
Yeah, what's up, Gary?
We get a phone call. John, I'm not sure where John's calling from.
Oh, okay. John, what do you got for us today?
I'm in Kentucky, Eric. How are you?
Boy, we do a really bad setup, don't we? I knew it was you the whole time. I did not sell that at all, did I?
No, you really didn't.
How many teeth do you have right now?
Anyway. Oh, come on. That's not right. That's not right. We might have listeners in Kentucky. You don't want that.
I'm sure we do have listeners in Kentucky. I think actually one of the guys who wrote in was talking about how many teeth he had at one point. But that was a while back.
No way.
So you're calling a game tonight, John?
Yeah, I've got the South Florida Cincinnati game tonight. So mm-hmm. I'll be for people that don't know, the Cincinnati airport is actually not in Cincinnati.
All right,
it's across
Kentucky.
The border. It's in Kentucky. So yeah. That's actually where I'm at right now. And
stay right at like an airport area hotel.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I'll be heading up to the University of Cincinnati here in about 30 to 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. And we'll toot our own horn here. How's that? ISP Network, radio network, is doing the game. Mm-hmm. So you'll want to find the sports radio station in your neighborhood. If not, you can go to XM Channel 203 tonight. How's that?
John, everybody will be listening to The Revolution this evening. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's true.
They do have a playoff game.
I forgot. They do have a playoff game. Which is actually why I'm not doing the playoff game tonight. So.
Oh, well, they're going to miss you, too.
Well, hey, listen, once I found out Taylor Twellman was out, I said, that's it. They're done. They're toast.
I know. That's tough news for them.
It is.
But so how'd your game go last Thursday? Because we didn't get to talk to you at all last week.
Yeah, actually, last Thursday it went pretty well. It was a little bit of a semi surprise. But West Virginia played real well. They played Auburn, and you know, before the season started, that looked to be one of the better non-conference games, mm-hmm. intersectional games of the year. Both teams have struggled a little bit, but West Virginia looked more like the West Virginia of old last week. So, mm-hmm. Turned out real well for them. And then tonight is kind of a battle for survival, to be honest with you, just because, both Cincinnati and, South Florida, desperately want to kind of try and hang in the Big East race. And, the Big East is a conference that doesn't have an overwhelming, a dominant team. It's barely got a couple of teams hanging on to the top 25, but that's because they keep eating themselves, you know? This is a league that bastardizes itself, so we'll see how it
turns out. South Florida, a little bit of a disappointment this year, no?
Yeah, I would have to agree with that, to be honest with you. I think that they were kind of, in position to be the kingpin, and then they went and stubbed their toe a home game against Pittsburgh, which is really, you know, no great shame because Pittsburgh is decent this year, but then they went and somehow inexplicably lost to Louisville last week, and Louisville doesn't have near the team that they've had in years past. Mm-hmm. And apparently it was because last week South Florida had like 14 penalties and turned the ball over, four times, and then they lose 24-20 on the road. And you know as well as anybody, when you play on the road, you can't make mistakes. If you shoot yourself in the foot, you're going to lose. You know, same thing could be said with the Patriots on Sunday night, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened to South Florida. So I don't think South Florida is a terribly disciplined team. I like Coach Jim Leavitt, their head coach, but I just don't know that they have the discipline internally in an effort to be one of the nation's elite teams just yet.
Well, back to the NFL now. Good luck calling the game tonight, by the way. But back to the NFL.
You
were obviously saw the Rams game last week. You were you're the PA announcer. Just quickly before we get to Indy, your thoughts on that win over the Rams?
Frankly, I thought that they did just enough to win. I mentioned this on the show a couple of days ago that I thought it was Matt Cassel's best game that he had played so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
I saw some things from Matt that, frankly, we hadn't seen yet this year in terms of his decision-making, his ability to adjust on the fly, his ability to get rid of the ball at least a little bit quicker out of the pocket and to step up into the folds of the pocket whenever the pocket starts to collapse around him. And so, there's enough there to see that, he's got an upside.
Yeah.
And I think as long as we continue to see an upside, and you know, I know the Providence Journal did actually a really good piece on him, I think it was today that I read, comparing his numbers quite favorably to Tom Brady's first seven games as a professional, and they're almost identical.
Yeah, I saw actually, you're right, I think that is in the journal. I also saw that stat flashed up earlier this week on SportsCenter, I believe.
Right, that is correct.
And it is remarkable how similar they are. Obviously, Castle has the advantage of having been in the system for a few years longer than Brady was at that point. But still, you know, I agree with you. Castle hasn't really done anything to show me that he can't run this offense. In fact, it's just the opposite. I think he's been rather efficient, and some of the mistakes he's made, some of the interceptions he's thrown weren't necessarily his fault, particularly last week against the Rams.
Oh, absolutely. I'm 110% behind that.
Some of his sacks, though, I think were more his fault in the beginning, because I think he was escaping the pocket a little bit too soon and not giving it enough time and trying to run out of trouble.
That's right. I think that's the biggest criticism of him, and I think it's a fair criticism. But this last week, though, against the Rams, I thought that we saw a little bit more poise back there.
I agree.
I thought we saw him try to let the pocket develop around him a little bit more, mm-hmm. and when he did choose to run, he chose the right time to run.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And I even wrote in my analysis after the game that it looked like at one point Tom Brady out there, in when the pocket would collapse, you're used to seeing Brady just stepping up, feeling that rush, stepping up away from it for just an extra second or half second, and scanning the field, making that throw downfield. And Castle did that a few times, whereas even a month ago maybe he might have done the opposite, tucked the ball and run with it and tried to escape and you know, not focus downfield. But he did that against the Rams, and you saw the result. He had a really good game.
Right, absolutely. I totally agree with that. So, you know, that my overwhelming impression was is that, you know, I don't think the Rams are near as bad as they played in their first four games, but I don't think anybody is either as good or as bad as any one game in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jim Haslett certainly has been the right thing for that program and for that team at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And
they
then, of course,
this
week against the you know, the Colts, I think it's gonna, you know, it'll boil down to the same things it always does, and whether or not the Colts, you know, some of their injured pieces are back in place, and whether or not they're effective.
Yep. Well, before we get started into that Colts game, we have some company in the studio now, John. My road roommate, Brian Lowe, who you may be familiar with, is here with us.
John, you know,
might want to turn your mic on there, friend.
I'm new to this.
Yeah.
John, you know, we're doing some different experimenting. The other day was you and me and Michael Parenti. This time you and me and Scalavino and I in studio. You're on the phone. We'll find the right combination eventually, but I like the experimentation.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, especially with this show, at least this year, this is the first year, because, you know, Gary can answer this as well as anybody, but this year is the first year that we've had some flexibility with, you know, some extra guys that we can actually use,
mm-hmm.
because invariably I always have football, and then, you know, hey, wouldn't you know it, you know, this is the last football game I have on my schedule tonight, and I start college basketball on Saturday. So there will be, you know, an occasional, you know, before the pro
Let's
football season is
Flyers.
Over. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, that stuff happens, you know, and I'm happy that we have Michael and Eric around to where we can, you know, have them as contributors inside the playbook. That's what really comes down to.
That all they are? Is that all we are? People you can use, John? I mean, you can use us? I mean, is that what's going on here? Or just
No. I didn't mean I could use. I meant that the Patriots could use.
Oh, for the greater good, right? Well, you know, it really is about position flexibility,
mm-hmm.
versatility. We can't just have one-dimensional people here.
We're all team players here, Below. You know that.
We are. We try to be. We try to be, and most of us succeed, I think.
All right.
Most of us.
Not naming names. But.
So we're going to be rooming again this weekend, Below. You know how that ends up usually.
Most likely you're right, given the fans some inside information, TMI.
Unless there's a sock hanging from the door.
Okay. But yes, Eric, back to your original point. We probably will be sharing a hotel room.
I am looking forward to this trip to India for no other reason than we are going to the Weber Grill for dinner.
You know what? I'll tell you what. The best
on
memory
Saturday?
Of the scouting combine.
No State Elmo's Fire?
Overrated, John. I went there last year during the combine. It was overrated.
John, I
disagree. Really?
Yes.
I disagree with Eric the way you are, too.
The couple of times that I've been to St. Elmo's was fantastic.
Well, I don't know how long ago you went, but when I went in February with the Below and Andy Hart for the combine,
listen,
it was. I've had better steakhouses.
I haven't been to, you know, it's like when you go on an airplane and you flip through the magazine, you got those steakhouses around America and all that. Yeah. That might be the only one I've ever been to. It's pretty good. And that shrimp cocktail.
It's good, but it's not everything that everyone talked it up to be.
Well, that shrimp cocktail will knock your socks off.
Oh, when that sauce hits your sinuses.
I'll be at St. Elmo's, John.
Okay, Gary's making the trek. He's going to St. Elmo's. I've been to St. Elmo's a handful of times. It's now that I've been on the scouting combine trip a few times. You know, that adds an extra trip to Indy and try to hit it up every now and then. But I'll tell you what, Eric and I, like you mentioned, we went to the Weber Grill, which was fantastic. It was fantastic.
It really
I'm excited
is, John.
About that. I'm excited about that.
Well, I'll try that next time I get to Indy then. You've convinced me. I'll have to give that a shout
it's
now.
It's great food, and they cook all of their offerings on Weber grills.
They better.
And you can see it, you know, they have the kitchen area wide open so you can see in the back there and flames going. It's great stuff, and they serve generous portions and
yeah, it was to Indy we go. It was a good spot. Now, rumor has it they're also going to play the game in addition to us actually going to taste the cuisine.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had scheduled the game for us around our going to the Weber Grill.
And the game's at night so that we can fully recover from whatever the dinner options
exactly.
are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But some of our emailers, John, and our listeners are concerned about a few things about this game, and rightly so. One of them, Christy from D.C., who is a lawyer, by the way, as we found out on PFW in Progress, wants to know, do we think Hobbs is going to be ready to play? Never thought I'd say these words, she writes, but I really think we need him out there. I'm very concerned about what Peyton is going to do to us otherwise. Do you think we can survive this game with a totally green secondary?
Well, he was at practice today.
Hobbs was
at practice
because he missed yesterday.
He was at practice today. Delta O'Neal. So really, Lewis Sanders was the only cornerback not at practice. That doesn't mean that Hobbs and O'Neal are 100%. I'm sure Hobbs will be on the injury report when we get it later on today. But they need whatever capable bodies they can get in the secondary in this game, really in any game, but this game in particular. If Hobbs is healthy, you know, whether or not Hobbs can stop Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Anthony Gonzalez, and all these guys, it's hard to say. But if Hobbs isn't available, then you think about sliding everybody else up one spot on the depth chart, and you're talking about, you know, maybe a Jonathan Wilhite, you know, maybe starting. You're talking about a Mike Richardson playing in the slot as a third quarter. You know, you got some issues. So Hobbs being back out there today is a good sign.
Yeah, I agree, especially after what we saw against the Rams, and Bill even mentioned it in the game, the post game press conference and the day after press conference about how he admitted they were searching at the end there to find ways to plug all the holes that they'd gotten in the secondary due to injuries, and then the guy who went out early in the game came back and made the key play against the Rams, Delta O'Neal. But you know what? Christy brings up a point about Hobbs. I think he has shown me something this year that he hadn't in years past. I think, I'm not ready to put him in Asante Samuel or Ty Law's category.
Or Canton.
Certainly not Canton yet. But he's clearly the best cover corner they have on this team.
Oh, sure.
I think that's easy.
Sure,
I think that's safe to say. But I think he's actually becoming, you know, he gets injured a lot in games, but you can't question his toughness. The guy comes back a lot, and he's never really missing games because of his injuries. And he's becoming, I think, a legitimate corner in this league.
He's gotten burnt a few times, quite a few times, but he's made some big plays. I mean, he's got a nose for the ball. You know, these big plays in the secondary have overshadowed really anything else that they've done, that the Patriots defense has done, and you can't just dismiss these big plays. But Hobbs is improving. I mean, I think he's improving. I think you watch him, you know, get burnt by Donnie Avery or a Vincent Jackson or whatever, and you're like, oh, Joe, here we go again. He's improving. He's still only in his fourth year,
right?
And you got to keep that in mind. And it was really Asante Samuel's fourth year, I think, that was his first big year,
breakout
06,
year.
You know,
yeah.
I think the jury's still out on him whether or not he can be a number one shutdown corner.
But like Castle, he's showing me stuff finally.
He's showing me
improvement.
Yeah, and he has to be by this point.
Yeah. John, what time's your game tonight?
I am on the air at 7:30, which means I will be leaving where I'm currently located here in the next 15 minutes, and it's about a half an hour drive to the campus from where I am.
Ouch.
Wow, I know how that feels. I know how that feels, Bilo. Well, I had that happen to me when I called in from California a few weeks ago.
I remember that. Well, I mean, I think what Gary's doing is looking in the best interests of what's going on here. He doesn't want to talk about any sporting event or anything.
Oh, now you know how it feels, Bilo.
Well, I've known how it feels.
I know what you were going to say. Other than the Revolution.
Other than New England Revolution soccer, whether it be TV or radio, that's where the focus is.
Right.
Honestly, I don't even know where John Rook
radio
game is.
Radio only. It's an ESPN game you want to listen
that's
to.
Right.
Brad and
that's
Greg
right.
on WEEI.
I don't know. Where is John? Where is John? I didn't even hear.
He's in Kentucky on the outskirts of Cincinnati. He's got the Cincinnati South Florida game tonight.
Oh, that's right in his. That's the type of game. I mean, that's, what is that? CUSA or, Kentucky, what was it, Kentucky?
No, Cincinnati.
Cincinnati
he's
again.
He's staying in Kentucky because of the airport
situation over there. Quite a situation.
It is. We've been through that situation before.
Been there, done that, yeah. Yeah. It's all about the refs.
So back to the Weber Grill now.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
So they're grilling steaks on the grill.
They grill steaks, chicken. Every entree they serve is cooked off of a Weber grill that's built into the kitchen.
Gary,
right there.
We went there once. We were there for 4 or 5 days. We went there once.
It was in the hotel that we stayed at.
Tried to go back later in the week, and it was hour and a half wait?
Yeah, minimum.
Hour and a half wait, I think.
Minimum. We stayed.
Yeah, we had Andy Hart with us. He's, you know, he's only one person, but you have to say he's eating for four when you go. So that you got to incorporate that into how many people are sitting.
And two seats for his headset.
Two seats,
right.
Exactly.
But no, it's a great place. We stayed, I believe it was the Embassy Suites in Indianapolis, and Weber Grills is part of that hotel. So the first day we got there was like the middle of the week. Early afternoon, we were hungry, got off the plane. We were like, yeah, let's just go try this place out. It's right downstairs. Phenomenal food. Phenomenal food, great servings, great portions. And then, like Bilo said, we went Saturday night. One of seven restaurants we went to try to get in on Saturday night without having reservations.
So it may speak more
minimum
to...
Minimum hour and a half wait at all these places. So we know better now. I have to check with Andy, actually, to make sure he made the reservations for us.
He actually said that in the locker room today. I got to make reservations.
He did say that?
He was busy today in that locker room, huh? Next week on the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce show.
Well, you know, to be fair, we do have a listener. We have a Colts fan who listens to PFW in Progress. You know, the Colts have a radio show on their internet, kind of like we do here. With former Colts players, and this Colts fan who's written in, I forget his name off the top of my head, but he's written in several times and listens to us because we're more entertaining than the former Colts players.
There you go.
And so he's not really getting a whole lot of Colts news from here, except on week 9 of the NFL regular season when the Colts always play the Patriots.
Right. If it's first week of November,
you know it's Colts Patriots.
If it's Sweet Week, it's Colts Patriots. And even better, it's on primetime. In primetime.
I'm looking forward to this new stadium, Lucas Oil.
So, yeah, no, I am. I'm not a huge RCA Dome guy, and we've been there so many times in these last 2 or 3 years that I feel like I've seen the development and the construction of Lucas Oil Stadium step by step.
Right.
It seems like it's a pretty good one as far as some of these new stadiums are concerned, and get a taste of it, get a feel for it. And is the dome still standing?
It's still standing right now.
Or still blown up or whatever.
I think it's still standing.
They haven't popped it yet, have they?
No, I'd love to do that though, wouldn't you?
Hey.
Be there, like have a helicopter suspend you over there and just pop it.
Just pop a little yeah.
I think when we were there for the combine back in February, I think what we heard from the Indy area people was that they were going to build Lucas Oil first and then deflate the dome and I think build a new convention center where the dome was.
Yeah.
Or where the dome is right now.
Right.
So
it's great.
That's going to be a few
connected,
years.
You know, hotels to convention center, stadium, multi-use. But on Colt game days, I mean, that's a different story. They had so many events going on there, but it should be fun. I mean, this game every year. I don't care that the Colts are 3-4, and I mean they still have the same guys in place. You know that they still have the capability offensively to do what they've done in the past. And it seems like this could be one of the weeks where they do have all their guys sort of clicking a little bit and healthy. Adai should be back.
Adai.
Yeah, Joseph Adai should be back. I liked what I saw to Dallas Clark the other night against Tennessee. He scored twice. But it's interesting. The Patriots have done a good job against Dallas Clark in the past with the lone key exception. Rodney Harrison last year. The lone big exception was the AFC Championship game 2 years ago when he had a massive game, scored a touchdown. Other than that, I was looking today. There isn't he's played in every regular season game the Patriots and Colts have had since he was a rookie, or maybe he was inactive as a rookie, but since 2004, he hasn't had more than 2 catches in any one game. I don't think he's had more than 20-something yards in any one game, hasn't scored a touchdown. They've been able to do the job on him. Rodney Harrison's been a big factor when it comes to that. That's what I'm watching. That's really one of the key situations, key matchups I'm looking for in this game, is how do the Patriots contain Dallas Clark without letting those three wideouts absolutely destroy them?
I floated this theory out earlier this week on PFW in Progress and earlier on this show. Want to see what you think. Gary Guyton has been playing a lot more minutes lately at inside linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
When the Patriots drafted Jerod Mayo in the first round this year, one
AFC
of the things,
Defensive Rookie of the Month, by the way.
Correct. One of the things we heard about him was how great he was laterally, mm-hmm. his speed laterally, mm-hmm. and in maybe not so much in coverage because he didn't have to do that at Tennessee, but just we know he's a fast player and size-wise he matches up with any tight end. How about you put Guyton on the inside in place of where Mayo is? Let's assume the Patriots come out in a nickel,
yep.
because of all the options,
yep.
that Indy presents, and slide Mayo over to cover Clark like Harrison did last year.
Have Mayo just shadow whichever
Have
side
Mayo
Clark
shadow
is.
Whichever side Clark's on,
yep.
because if your other alternative is to replace Harrison with the safety that replaced him, you're talking about either James Sanders, or Brandon Merriweather, mm-hmm. and I think they're on the smaller side to be covering a guy like Clark. Speed-wise, no problem covering him. But
right.
size-wise, I think he'd clearly have an advantage over either of those two guys. But you put a Mayo out there, who's clearly his size.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, we'll have to see about his speed against him. But I think that might be a more favorable matchup. You put the rookie, Guyton, who's been getting more time there in the middle, and play your regular nickel and see how that works out for you. Maybe at least to try it.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And if I'm not mistaken, that AFC Championship game, that was the game where Eric Alexander
started inside linebacker
and
right.
played quite a bit, and you know that was where there were problems up the middle. It was Clark,
right.
it was the other tight end, I can't think of his name right now.
Utecht,
and then there was another guy, maybe he's more of a fullback and I can't remember his name, especially late in the game. There's a guy, I can't remember his name, but anyway, they were going over the middle, and you know Eric Alexander was involved a lot and they were targeting him.
Mm-hmm.
If Mayo is seen as a guy, well, he's certainly a better version of Eric Alexander in coverage and
already,
an inside linebacker.
Yeah. Yep.
But obviously the Patriots in the past have considered that young, athletic, inside linebacker type mm-hmm. to play a big role in a game like this against the Colts. You may be right. That Mayo-Guyton combination, one way or another, could come in very handy, and maybe Mayo is the guy to sort of shadow Clark. If they have the right guy in place, like they did with Harrison, and no one can replace Harrison, mm-hmm. but if they do have the right guy in place, that's what they're looking to do to neutralize Clark, I think. And it's an interesting thought. It's also a matter of, you know, can you put that much on Gary Guyton to be a starter in this game? One way or another, though, these guys are playing a big role. I mean, these
yep.
are the guys they have. It's not like they're going to find anyone new. I don't think Junior Seau is going to be appearing all of a sudden this week.
Not yet.
I still think there's a chance on that.
There might be sometime next month. It's getting to that point where they would have to make a decision.
Sure, we're getting
sooner
close
or later
to,
by Thanksgiving.
By Thanksgiving, we know one way or the other. I think so. Unless, you know, and then after Thanksgiving, it would be if there's a disaster injury-wise,
mm-hmm.
and you've got to tap into him. But tough matchup. This is a tough matchup week for the Patriots, mm-hmm. I think, defensively. This is a tough one. It's tough for a lot of teams going up against the Colts. We'll see. I think it's a tough one. I think I'm interested definitely in the Clark angle, and if they throw three wideouts out there as well, in addition mm-hmm. to Clark, that's a tough one for the Pats.
On the other side of the ball, they are losing Marlon Jackson
for the year.
He's done for the year.
For the year,
but it looks like they're going to get Bob Sanders back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who not only helps them in pass coverage, but they're a completely different team against the run when he's in there. He's one of the smallest guys in the league. 5'8", 200 pounds.
Yeah,
he's barely bigger than I am, and he's the defensive player of the year, and great in the running game.
Mm-hmm.
New England obviously has some injuries in the backfield.
Yeah.
Morris is going to be out for this game.
You got to imagine. Sure.
Maroney out for the season. So that's left with Lamont Jordan, who I believe was
back at practice yesterday and today.
Uh-huh.
Good sign. And you got to figure he's ready to go.
Any evidence of the injury?
You've been to practice, haven't you?
Not this week, no.
You've been to Patriots practices,
sure.
Past, right? You can't,
sure.
You can't really tell much. I mean, stretching. They were doing. It looked like some running back drills without the ball, just some lateral movement and stuff like that. You know, hard to say. I don't think it didn't look like he was limited. I believe on yesterday's injury report he was listed as limited.
Participation.
Which, right, yep. which basically means that he did something other than mm-hmm. participate in absolutely everything.
Right.
Hard to say exactly what. Mm-hmm. Not unheard of for a guy to be at practice Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday coming off an injury yet still miss the game.
Right.
It may come down to a game time decision. I do think though that the Patriots would still feel comfortable if it's Falk, Evans, and Green Ellis mm-hmm. going to the game. Kevin Falk had a big game last week, had a big game against the Colts last year.
Mm-hmm.
This could be another Kevin Falk-type game. I don't see it being a big Ben Jarvis-Green Ellis game mm-hmm. if he's counted upon for 12 to 14 carries. I don't see that. But I think the Patriots can get it done a little bit offensively, mixing and matching a little bit there, using Falk the way they used him last week, which was somewhere 12 to 14 or maybe more than that, 16 touches or so.
Somewhere around there.
You don't want to do that. You're not going to get away with that every single week, but he can be effective on a short stretch like that. Mm-hmm. And if they do have Lamont Jordan available, that's even better. The only problem with some of that is I think that they're going to need the numbers and need the bodies defensively mm-hmm. that, okay, let's say you have Lamont Jordan out there. Well, who from last week's game, for instance, doesn't suit up? Who's inactive? It's not one of the cornerbacks. You're going to need all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not one of the linebackers. Is it another offensive line? Yeah, I don't. That's what all I'm saying is
right.
to
they
add
have to
Lamont
make some,
Jordan
they
on
have to make
into
some
it.
Decisions.
Right. If Lamont Jordan's 100% and they have no worries about him,
right.
maybe it's Ben Jarvis Green Ellis who isn't suiting up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something you're looking at.
One thing that Bill mentioned in his press conference earlier this week was the praise that he gave to Robert Mathis and Dwight Freeney. Probably, he said, the best tandem of pass rushers that they have faced this year and maybe will face all year.
Yeah.
As we know, New England has given up an inordinate amount of sacks
Absolutely.
So far this year. It's only in week second.
Yeah.
Already almost 30 sacks.
Yep.
I like, though, what I've seen out of Mark LaVore, who has stepped in for Nick Kazier on the right side. Stephen Neal has gotten back, at least on a rotational basis, at right guard. And on the other side, Matt Light and Logan Mankins have been their steady selves, as they always have been. Are the Colts going to be able to get to Matt Cassel and force him to do things that he doesn't necessarily want to do?
I think Robert Mathis is going to be very antsy for this game. He ate Nick Kazier alive last year. If Nick Kazier's back in there, I don't know if Nick Kazier is going to get back in there this week. Whether it's Kazier or LaVore, that's a matchup heavily in the Colts' favor, and I think that's one I'd be worried about if I'm Cassel. It's not his blind side, but I remember there was a play early, I think, in the game last year. Kazier got just destroyed by Mathis.
Mm-hmm.
And, Freeney, Light, I mean, that's, you give the edge to Freeney against virtually any left tackle. I think Light's held his own. I think Light can hold his own, but they avoided Freeney last year. He got hurt before that game. And, these are quick, these are fast sack, fast pass rushers. Whether or not Cassel gets a lot of sacks, I think he's going to be forced into quicker decisions than he's used to. Now, what he's been doing is his quick decisions are off and run. If he doesn't find the open guy early, he's going to run.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably going to run a few times this week.
Mm-hmm.
He might get hit hard because he's going to be making those quick decisions. He might not get sacked. But on some of these run plays whether he's running, he might try to run outside to the sideline more often just to avoid some of these hits. I think he's going to be rushed a little bit. I think it'd be nice if the sack total isn't very high. The sack total doesn't tell you everything.
Right.
I think he'll be hurried often.
I'm wondering if we're going to see a lot more, two backs in the backfield or extra tight ends to help Chip on the edge.
Yeah. And that's been a topic this week too, is the way that, Watson and, Benjamin Watson mm-hmm. and David Thomas have been used. They're combined for, they only have a handful of catches on the season
mm-hmm.
combined. They've been needed in the blocking role more often, and what the Patriots are missing this year, I think, is and what they've had in the past, is a Daniel Graham, Kyle Brady type of blocker,
mm-hmm.
virtually a sixth offensive lineman. Neither Watson nor Thomas is that guy. They're capable blockers,
mm-hmm.
and you're probably right. I mean, they've been in on a lot of snaps, and more for their blocking, more for blocking and they've got Heath Evans in often as well. But, that's another good one. The usage of Watson and Thomas,
mm-hmm.
Whether or not they're counted on to block more.
Our intrepid producer, Gary Gradecki, is handing me this latest practice participation report. The Patriots have their Thursday additions here. They've got pretty much the same as yesterday. Ellis, though, like you said, missed yesterday, but he was limited today.
Yep.
I If I had to put money on it, I'd say he's playing.
Yes, I would absolutely. I don't put money on anything.
Right.
But, yeah.
The only other change to the report was that Randy Moss, who was limited yesterday with a foot injury, full participation today.
Okay.
You were out of practice?
I was. And
full pads?
They were in full pads today. Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm getting my days mixed up. Yeah, they were. And saw Moss and. Mm-hmm. That was one of the interesting ones because what happens is, you know, media goes into practice at the beginning and then, you know, you don't see the rest of practice and then the injury report comes out a couple hours later. If a guy appears on the injury report that you didn't expect, like Moss was yesterday limited,
right.
The one thing you have to keep in mind is, could he have gotten injured during practice?
Right.
A guy could get injured during practice. It could be, for all we know, a guy could get injured during practice and it's a season-ending injury.
Right.
And you don't really, really know until they put him on IR.
Right.
When I saw Moss out there today, I said, okay, maybe something came up at practice. Maybe it was during the week. Maybe it was during the game that we didn't know. The fact that he was out there today and by all appearances, he was going to be able to participate mostly in practice.
Right.
That was a good sign.
And the reason I asked about whether it was full pads or not is because if you're conducting, let's say, a walkthrough or a shells practice. You might be able to have full participation.
Yeah.
It's a different story when you're going full pads, you're going all out if you're limited or not.
Sure.
The fact that he was full participation in a full pads practice is even better.
Yep.
He was also quite, shall we say, vociferous in the locker room today. I don't know if
that
you
was
were.
One, oh, I was there. That was one entertaining
that
moment.
That was one loud and entertaining,
one
entertaining
moment
from
Randy
Moss. So he didn't seem to be showing any ill effects from any injury.
It seemed to oddly be a little good-natured, even.
A little bit.
A little bit. We can't repeat it all here. We can't really air it here.
No.
Let's just say it was Moss being Moss. It was entertaining. I think everybody got a kick out of it.
And the Colts side, they have yet to list their Thursday participation, but from yesterday...
What are they waiting for, you know? Don't they know this show only goes till 4?
Well, they have that other show that nobody listens to, apparently.
Oh.
So they're waiting
for
that for
right.
them. Yeah.
Right.
Gary Brackett, Clifton Dawson, Dwight Freeney, Roy Hall, Dante Hughes, Marlon Jackson... Well, we already know about Marlon Jackson. Tim Jennings all did not participate. Freddie Callejo, the knee, was limited. Robert Mathis, not injury related, did not participate.
Right. Now this is their Wednesday.
This is their Wednesday one. They haven't updated Thursday yet.
But to keep in mind, I wouldn't overreact on too many of those because, like the Patriots last week, Monday night game on the road, Wednesday practice. Some of those guys, the non injury related, may have just been it's 36 hours after a tough game.
Yeah.
We're not going to practice everybody.
Exactly.
We've got another big one this week. So we'll see. You know, unless we see something similar today on the injury report, I wouldn't read too much into some of these non-participants.
Dominic Rhodes, Reggie Wayne, the other two notables, both did not participate. Rhodes with an ankle, Wayne with a knee. I'm guessing we'll see both of them.
Yeah. Now, the most interesting thing about all that is no Joseph
Who's
Dye
not on
there.
Right.
And
Bob Sanders.
And Bob Sanders.
Right.
For whatever that's worth.
All right. Well, it's going to be a fun game.
It is going to be a fun game.
I think this is a huge test for Castle.
Yep.
I think it's a huge test for the offensive line. It's a huge test for the front seven of New England to get pressure on and sack Manning. And for the defensive backfield for New England.
So it's not a huge test basically just for the special teams.
Right.
For Lonnie.
Right.
Lonnie, because this is not a big test for Lonnie.
It's not a big test
for confident.
AFC special teams player of the month,
right,
Steven Gostkowski.
How about Hanson?
That's a good point. That's a good point because against the Rams, we saw the Hanson of old who was kicking the ball far when he should have been kicking it short and all that.
All
so that could be an interesting game. But we'll have one more day to talk about it amongst ourselves before we hit the road.
That's what everyone really wants to know.
Exactly.
How do we talk about it amongst ourselves?
And we'll be talking about it again next week when we get back. But that's Patriots Playbook for this week.
Yep.
Bilo?
What's coming up next, Eric?
Thanks.
Thanks
for job, joining. Eric.
Thank you.
Way
Thank
to
you,
be.
Gary.
Way to be. What's coming up next?
You stumped me.
You don't know what's coming up next.
Oh, you know what? No, I do know. I do know what's coming
up
next.
There you go.
Bilo's Fantasy Lowdown.
You've said it, which you listen to all the time and base your fantasy moves on the Fantasy Lowdown every week, right?
I got to be honest with you.
Don't even tell me.
I have two fantasy leagues of which I was a part.
Yeah.
I have not set a lineup for either one of them.
That's That is just disheartening.
All right, folks, Patriots Playbook, we'll see you next Tuesday.